Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If he's listening, I just hope he understands that what he's proposing to do is completely contrary to our values as Americans. That this country has been built on the notions of religious freedom and religious tolerance. And as a very practical matter, as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States, I just want him to understand that this stunt that he is talking about pulling could greatly endanger our young men and women in uniform.
Pleased to meet you. Hope you get my name. Oh, yeah. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my name.
Oh, welcome, 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 welcome. Yeah. I'll play a little bit more of whatever. Sympathy for the devil on the Savage Nation today. It seems that our president and our secretary of state, seems everybody has sympathy for the radical Muslims throughout the world and no sympathy whatsoever for, well, for the American patriot. Isn't it odd that the liberals have stopped the pastor from burning the Korans in Gainesville, Florida, and they quoted freedom of religion and hate crimes and you can't do it and you can do it and you can't. These are the same people who never said you needed a permit to burn American flags. Isn't that odd? And they also say that building this, burning the Korans would be a... Well, play clip two. Listen to the Commander-in-Chief now in this one.
This is a recruitment bonanza for Al-Qaeda. You know, you could have serious violence in places like Pakistan or Afghanistan.
Wolf mentality. I want to remind you of something. Isn't it true that the peaceful Muslims attacked us and were able to recruit, Osama bin Laden was able to recruit on 9/10/2001 before 9/11? There was no Guantanamo Bay, there was no Afghanistan war, no Iraq war on September 10, 2001. And yet Osama bin Laden was able to recruit the peaceful God-fearing Muslims then to hate America. How is that possible? So the more we've placated them, there have been more terrorist attacks on U.S. soil by Muslims in Obama's first 18 months in office than in the 6 years under Bush after he invaded Iraq. This is everything is upside down here. It is upside down. But the biggest laugh is when Obama refers to himself as Commander-in-Chief. Now, certainly he is Commander-in-Chief, but I've talked about this. This goes back to George Washington, who in fact was our first president, as you may know, unless you recently broke into America through the Rio Grande or smuggled yourself in an airplane. George Washington was in fact our first commander-in-chief because he actually was a general, and he successfully led the military against the British troops. That's why he was commander-in-chief and why he should be and should have been commander-in-chief. But when you have an anti-war, anti-gun, anti-American, anti-flag, anti-God, anti-country, anti-church man in the White House, let us say we have such, does that make sense for him to be commander-in-chief? What does he know about the military? The whole thing is upside down. I feel like I'm living in Alice in Wonderland. Now, Obama says that if the preacher had gone ahead and burnt Korans, it would be a recruitment bonanza for Al-Qaeda. But how about building a mosque on Ground Zero? Has that not been inflammatory? Has that not been a recruitment tool for extremists in the U.S. to hate Muslims? How come we haven't heard such concerns about building a mosque on Ground Zero? How is that possible? How is that possible? Now, liberals, as you well know, have been citing the Constitution and the First Amendment during the threatened Koran burning. Now, you know what liberals do, don't you, when they talk about the First Amendment? They promote hate crimes laws, free speech zones known as Hate America. They go around the country ripping down Ten Commandments memorials, taking down any reference to God. They promote speech codes, hate crimes. They sue anybody who has anything to do with God. So whenever you see liberals talking about our constitutional rights, what they're really talking about is the right to perform sex acts in front of children in schools, promote cross-dressing in elementary schools, to permit the New York Times or other newspapers to publish classified military documents, the right of pornographers to penetrate schoolyards, the right of child molesters to molest, the right of saboteurs, terrorists, murderers, traitors, flag burners, except such, to do their bidding. So there it is. There it is. It's a very, very sad day. General Petraeus chimed in, too, and he said that the Quran burning could be used by radical jihadists to recruit Muslims to attack Americans. Well, as I said to you, Osama bin Laden was able to attract and recruit Muslims way back in 93 when they first bombed the World Trade Center. You forgot about that? You forgot all about that because you're living in Bloomberg's universe. It'd be a good movie, Bloomberg's Universe. How about when the human herrings at Brooklyn College, remember about 10 years ago, a group of human herrings at Brooklyn College, not of the Christian faith, by the way, permitted a so-called artiste to display a Jesus in a jar of urine. Now, wouldn't that have been considered inflammatory? Of course it was. But we heard about free speech. We have the right to dip Jesus in a jar of urine because Christians won't do anything to us. We've beaten them back. Christians are punks and cowards. They've been beaten up by their own rhetoric. Go ahead, dip Jesus in that urine, said the human herrings. Then, of course, remember when the human smelt at Brooklyn College permitted another artiste to portray Mary in elephant dung? They said it's free speech. We have free speech laws in America, the human smelt said. How about building a mosque at Ground Zero? Isn't that a recruitment tool for people who already are sitting on the fence about Muslims? Is this not inflammatory to permit these radical shysters to build their mosque down there in Ground Zero when you see all of the things they've done in the past? The dead tax deadbeats. You know, by the way, they've turned down an offer to buy the building down there for more money than they paid. At a much higher price it came out than they paid for it. In fact, let's go backwards. The folks who owned the building had an offer four times as much as what the Arab paid for it. Do you realize that that's a violation of law? That means that the people who bought the mosque, okay, paid money under the table, no doubt, to the seller, who sequestered the money somewhere to avoid taxes. And that's what the New York State Attorney General should be looking into, by the way. But, okay, let's put that aside. That's a financial issue when we're talking about other things. Today being Thursday in the Savage Nation, it's a day I do nutrition and health, and I promised you I would try to do my special shows for each day of the week. And today's specialty is going to be on ethnic foods. Many of you consider yourself proud of your ethnic heritage, and I'm going to talk about what it really means. And I'm going to ask you some questions. What ethnic foods did you eat in your family as you were growing up? And what was the most disgusting ethnic food your parents made you eat as a child? And did you see members of your family experiencing health problems as a result of eating so-called traditional ethnic foods? Those are some of the things you can call about because I think it'll be fun. But I want to now go back to a book I wrote. It's not available. It's not for sale. I am not selling books. Unlike Wallbanger, unlike the Marjo with the blackboard, this book was written in 1981. It's called The Skeptical Nutritionist, The Way of the Skeptical Nutritionist. And Macmillan Publishing published it. It's a little-known book. I may reproduce it, actually, because it's so ahead of its time. On page 6, I talk about food fascism. Did you know that? That even when I was a nutritionist, I was already into this? Here's what I wrote. The bookstores are lined with correct diets for the unmet masses. Social engineers, having arranged our personal lives from sexual behavior to dying, have been aided in applying their golden rules to our last frontier food. Food fascism, like other varieties of the social disease, requires lieutenants to proselytize. Not wishing to participate in any form of totalitarianism, I wrote, I intend not to dictate a correct diet for a fictional reader. Now, I wrote this back in the early 80s. So you could see I was already quite political, even though I was in the field of medical, in nutrition and health and whatnot. Now, having said that, I want to go into something else in this book because I think you'll find it very, very interesting. And it's about ethnic foods and the ethnic factor and things like that. And I want to show you how important this is, what happens to people when they shift their diets from their really traditional diets, from their authentic original diets, to some Western-style diet, what happens to them. I'm going to give you an example, and it's found on page 30 of The Way of the Skeptical Nutritionist. Again, it's not available for sale. Maybe you could find it used. You know that some of my used books are selling for hundreds of dollars? I was shocked. I went on Amazon, and my book, Healing Children Naturally, in the original version, is going up to $140. You could buy it for like $20 on my site. But anyway, look what I wrote. An example of disease states that can be induced. Okay, let's start from the top. Are you worried about diabetes? Has your doctor told you it's related to diet and exercise? Or just put you on a little pill? Listen to one paragraph. An example of disease states that can be induced as a result of severe and dramatic dietary changes can be found amongst the Yemenite Jewish people. For example, the Kurds and Yemenites who came to Israel had rates of diabetes as low as the Eskimos of Iceland and Greenland, 0.3 per thousand. Both groups lived in an isolated geographical situation with little contact with Western lifestyle, including diets. Soon after settling in areas where Western habits and diets prevail, a sharp rise in the prevalence of diabetes is noted. This is held up by a study done by A.M. Cohen in 1958, who compared the rates of occurrence in four Jewish ethnic groups in Israel based on the father's place of birth. These were Sephardic, Ashkenazi, Yemenite, and Kurdish communities. The study sample was composed of nearly 16,000 people, half males, half females, and their age distribution resembled that of the general Israeli population. Now listen to the rest of this. Even, let's say, it doesn't matter whether you're Jewish or not, if you can draw any conclusion from this, it may help you avoid diabetes. Listen. Interestingly, the lowest rates of diabetes mellitus were seen among Yemenite newcomers, 0.06%, followed by the Sephardic people, 1%, while the old Yemenite settlers had the highest rate, 2.9%, even higher than that of Ashkenazi Jews at 2.5%. So what is this all about? Dr. Goodman cites an animal experiment conducted in 1964 in which sand rats were transferred from their natural desert habitat to a laboratory environment. The rats that were transferred and their first-generation offspring exhibited inappropriate hyperglycemia associated with obesity and diabetes. Subsequent generations tended to adapt to lab conditions and displayed mild or no hyperglycemia. Here's the last line. In man, however, these adaptations do not occur as readily, as evidenced by the higher rate of diabetes among second-generation Israelis. So what did I just tell you? I just told you that in one example, diabetes rates rose when traditional people moved to Israel where the Western diet was quite prevalent. And once they started eating high-fat, high-sugar diets, they started to develop high rates of diabetes mellitus. Did you know that? And so, therefore, I'm telling you that it's very important you understand who you are ethnically, what your genetic composition may be, to help you understand how you may have adapted wrongly to Western civilization, not only in terms of your diet, but in terms of everything else. Now, I don't expect you to change your life when I explain to you what the ethnic factor is. I'm not going to devise a pellet containing all known and all suspected required nutrients for each ethnic group in America. I mean, very nice. Here's your Italian pellet. Here's your Irish pellet. Here's your Jewish pellet. Here's your Ukrainian pellet. Here is your Romanian pellet. Here's your African pellet. And so on. I'm not going to do that. Because then we become nothing but perfectly trim, absolutely healthy automatons with timetables for our every act, including death. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So the big news is that the Florida minister has canceled the burning of the Qurans on 9/11. He has yielded to the president, secretary of state, the head of the UN, the head of the military. Everyone was against him. They all said that he doesn't have a right to a permit to burn the Qurans. But apparently the U.S. military burned Christian Bibles. They threw them in the garbage and burned them. And whenever the left-wing vermin wanted to burn flags, they certainly didn't need permits. The vermin on the left said that it's the reason our men are dying is to give them the right to burn flags. So there it is. That's the world we're living in, a world of beaten-up pacifists telling us that we have no right to express ourselves in any way except that which the throwbacks tell us to express ourselves. That's right. See, we have a war going on in the world right now. We're losing it. It doesn't matter what's happening on the battlefield, even though we're losing that as well. Otherwise, it would have been over like 6 years ago. See, since we're still fighting it, it means we lost it already. That's because men like Admiral Mullen, who looks more and more and more like he belongs in the central casting in Hollywood playing whatever he plays, rather than doing the job itself. I mean, there's no victory here. There's no one in the military wants to win. It's all a holding operation. They send our boys into hand-to-hand combat instead of using the high-tech weapons. So how can you win like that? They're always going to win in hand-to-hand combat. That's what they specialize in, throat cutting. Hiding behind their women and then blowing up your troops by firing from a mosque. Go ask somebody who's fought in Iraq or Afghanistan if I'm making it up. Ask them how many of their fellow troops, American troops, were killed by live fire coming out of mosques. Go ask them. See if I'm making it up. So therefore, we lost already. Then we're losing the culture, the battle on the social cultural level, because, again, we have spineless pacifist leaders everywhere you turn who won't stand up for anything American, borders, language, culture. By the way, go to the bottom of michaelsavage.com and take a look at the billboard from Oregon. Someone put up anonymously. It was not me. It says, "While you are sleeping, borders, language, culture, we're losing all three." Seen on the way to work this morning. And sent to me. I couldn't believe it. Next to it, there's an article. Facebook users are insecure, narcissistic, and have low self-esteem, equivalent of staring at themselves in the mirror. Facebook users.
Savage.
So it's a general talk show. I mean, we're talking about politics, but as I said to you last week, even though each of my days is a specialty day, all the roads go back to politics. They all come and go from politics. There's nothing more political than health and nutrition. Look what Obama did to the greatest medical system in the world. So let me read you something that I remember hearing when I was a child. "He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day." Now, what is that catchy rhyme mean? He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. Well, it means that if you eat your way, you're getting certain nutrients which are life-giving and longevity-inducing. What is whey? It's the liquid remaining after the milk has been curdled and strained and turned into cheese. There's a liquid that remains, and it's usually discarded, I believe. Now, what's in the stuff that we throw out, called whey? Well, it's rich in so many things: riboflavin, B12, magnesium, potassium, zinc, selenium. So he who plays his fife and eats his whey will live to fife another day. It's the equivalent to eating whole grains as opposed to eating white bread. It's equivalent to eating brown rice as opposed to eating white rice. You know, beriberi was rampant in Asia when they ate white rice, until they found out that all of the nutrients that were being thrown out in the husk of the rice were the nutrients required to prevent, for example, rickets. You know, that's an old thing you learned in high school, probably. I don't even know if they teach that anymore. Right now, they give you a pill instead. Everything they tell you to eat garbage, live like a lab rat, and take a pill. And then if you get sick, go to the quack and get six more pills. That's all. But those of us who actually studied foods and what's in them and want to know how to protect ourselves from disease have written books about it. So I remember, for example, there's another thing that's coming back to mind from my great book, 20, 30 Years Ahead of Its Time, called The Skeptical Nutritionist. And this was about another topic, if only I could remember it. I'm a little hungover, frankly, from last night. I went to a big dinner, took the dog, and I drank a lot of vodka. I feel great, don't get me wrong. Don't say it's hypocritical. I believe in vodka. But vodka's a health food if you don't do it every night, which I don't. So there was a subject in here that I wanted to find. Oh, I remember. It's, it's fava bean hemolysis. I know that's not on everyone's lips. It's a disease we know nothing about. But I remember when I uncovered it, when I was writing this book, how many doctors wrote me who were ahead of their time. They said, oh, my God, Savage, how did you do this? Where'd you find it? Well, I had just gotten my PhD from the University of California, and I was very just fascinated by ethnic diets. And I studied every arcane piece of literature there was, and I came up with some interesting things. And so I found this about fava beans. I've never eaten a fava bean ever since. Now, sometimes if I go in an Italian deli, you see fava beans, and they're fine if you're not, let us say, I shouldn't say allergic to them, but that's close to what I'm about to tell you. There are individuals who do not understand that they lack certain enzymes to break down the fava beans. It's called a G6PD deficiency. I know it's too technical for you, and I don't want to do it to you, but the fact is you get very sick eating fava beans. It's equivalent to acute hemolytic anemia. And you say you don't know what that is. I'm showing you what could happen when you eat certain foods that you're not aware, you're not even able to digest. For example, it's well known that Jews, most blacks, and most Asians cannot digest dairy products directly because they are deficient in the enzyme necessary to break down milk, the milk product known as lactose or milk sugar. Jews, black people, and Asians have very low amounts of lactase, so they are to avoid dairy. Did you know that? So the medical profession, instead of telling Jews, black people, and Asians, don't eat dairy, they tell them, take a pill with some lactate in it. The trick would be to avoid the dairy. Now, why would Jews, blacks, and Asians have evolved or adapted to a low dairy diets? Because there weren't high dairy diets in their traditional environs. There were just not high dairy diets. Basically, there weren't high dairy diets, so they adapted to not eating dairy, and they didn't develop the enzymes necessary to break down milk sugar. Now let's go to you. Many of you believe in raw foods because you're ignoramuses, and you think that you're an ant or a rat or some kind of animal in the plains. That's absurd. The fact is that you should eat cooked foods. You're a human being. It doesn't mean you shouldn't eat some vegetables or fruits that aren't cooked. But to think you should eat only raw foods is ludicrous. It's lunacy. It's another part of the folklore of the psychologically deficient liberal to think that raw foods are better for you. It's the equivalent of thinking that a gigantic bird will come from the sky and bring you back to paradise. But actually, I want to talk about food instead. And that is the issue of how ethnic foods are very important, both to know what to eat and what not to eat. I'm coming up with something very, very small here. It's called fava bean hemolysis. And there are people who cannot eat fava beans because they lack the correct enzyme to break down fava beans. And what happens? The urine becomes very dark or red. Shock may develop in bad cases, and death can follow. Did you know that? This condition is caused by a lack of glucose 6-phosphate dehydrogenase. That's an enzyme that breaks down the fava bean. G6PD. You don't have G6PD if you are a Kurd, for example. There are people called the Kurds, as you all know. In the north of Iraq, there's a whole land called Kurdistan. And the Kurds have one of the highest frequencies of this disorder on record. And favism, which I just described, affects individuals with a Mediterranean phenotype. And hemolysis can occur within only a few hours of inhaling even the pollen of fava bean plants, or within 1 or 2 days of eating fresh or dried fava beans. So if you are a Kurd, don't eat fava beans. You say, well, what does it have to do with me? I'm not a Kurd. I don't know. Maybe you are the type of individual who is a Mediterranean background, and you also are deficient in G6PD, and you may have a hemolytic reaction and not even know it. You go to the hospital, you have dark urine, red urine, you have shock, and you don't know it's because you just ate a fava bean salad in an Italian deli. I'm trying to warn you that this kind of knowledge was known back in ancient times, going back to antiquity. As far back as Pythagoras in the 6th century B.C., 6th century before Christ, people were warned that eating this type of bean could yield death. And in the 5th century B.C., Herodotus also mentioned favism. Now, you've forgotten it, though, because we don't know anything about food in this country, of this nature, I mean. All we know is what looks good on a plate. We have geniuses who go to cooking school with pimples on their face, and they come out, as long as they know how to drizzle olive oil on something and put strawberries and raspberries on steak, they think that they're a genius. But in this century, acute hemolytic anemia was reported in 1926 in a Panamanian plantation population. Well, I don't want to go into it because it's too complicated. Maybe you've learned something. But here is another example of the classic one man's meat is another man's poison. And we can all learn from this and remember not to put down our friends who may find some of our most magical food combinations totally repugnant. Because the abhorrence of our favorite food can often reflect a survival instinct which we must learn to respect. Did you like that? This is all from page 29 of The Skeptical Nutritionist, not in print, so I'm not selling you anything, unlike Wallbanger or those who sell floor mats at every turn. I'm giving you information for free because it's important to do. Now, what if you're not of a Kurdish background? I'm going to just read a little bit more to you. You don't want to hear any more about that. Did you know that I can tell you what they studied, Arabs with this and Jews and this and that. I don't think Christians are affected by this at all. I think they can eat anything. I get the feeling the cracker can eat most anything. And that's why they live on mayonnaise, white bread, and scotch. Good genetic stock. They don't worry about G6PD deficiency because they never eat the stuff. They wouldn't be caught dead near a fava bean. Give them a white bread sandwich with mayonnaise and a nice scotch, and that's it. They're happy as a Maasai eating the blood of an ox. I think that's funny. And so I'm making myself laugh. I sound like a nutty professor now. Remember you had professors who would tell a joke that was so arcane only he laughed at it? And you thought he was a genius because he was laughing at something and you didn't understand? I just did that because I did just say something only I understood. New York, John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, you're talking fava beans. I just got to go to a party tonight and she said she has a fava bean salad and I want to know if it's you from New York who has Russian ancestry, first generation, could eat fava beans.
Is she Russian herself or Italian or what?
No, she's a wasp, so she probably could eat anything. But
No, they could eat Marlboros on white bread and not get sick.
Yeah, and they never complain about the food.
No, and then you go in a restaurant with people, they're very classy. Wherever they sit, they're happy. Whatever they're served, they're happy. They never complain. A Jew goes in a restaurant right away. He wants a different table. He wants to be moved around. He wants to see the owner. He wants a special menu. I mean, this is just an ethnic thing. Ask Mayor Bloomberg.
No, but can I eat the fava beans?
Well, what I have to ask you a couple of questions. First of all, the real answer would be you have to be tested for G6PD deficiency, and I don't think anyone does that test. But what is your actual ethnic background?
Russian.
When you say Russian, where? How far back?
Well, my mother. Well, my mother's family. See, my mother was born in China. They were Shanghai, but they were.
Oh, they escaped Hitler and came through Shanghai. What an epic journey that was.
Yeah. They crossed the border.
If only your mother had stayed in Shanghai, you'd be much richer today.
Yeah. They were doing a lot better.
If only she had stayed there and you waited 50 years, look what would have happened with Shanghai today.
Yeah, because when my grandfather would get mad when he would go to these reunions, these Shanghai reunions, and he would say how we suffered, and he goes, "What are you talking about? I was making more money in Shanghai than I did when I came to New York."
Yeah, it gives a new meaning to the word. He was Shanghai'd.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to answer your question in the best way I can. For those of you who like statistics, it may be interesting to note that this deficiency in the non-European population of Jews varies from 1% to 2% among European Sephardim, up to 25% among Iraqi Jews, 28% among Caucasus Jews examined. That's pretty high, by the way, because you're probably a Caucasus Jew, by the way. And it's 61% of Kurdish Jews have this deficiency. And of the Arabs studied, just a bit over 4% of the people exhibited a deficiency in this enzyme. I don't know if that helps you directly, because I can't answer it directly. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so Russian.
I just won't eat. I won't eat fava beans at all because of this. I really don't want to wake up to red urine, to be frank with you, and go into shock because I ate a bean salad.
Yeah, I already have too much dairy.
Well, I mean, well, fava beans are not dairy. They're beans. Let me tell you right now, I go to like a Mexican restaurant. I always tell them no beans. I don't digest beans myself at all. I don't like beans. I can't eat them. My stomach, it hurts. It's distended. I apparently lack the enzymes necessary to digest beans. We are adapted to certain foods. You know that. People are. All different peoples are, except the wasp, who, as I say, can eat anything. That's why they're so hardy and took over the world.
Yes.
But, I mean, I wouldn't eat them tonight. I wouldn't eat just pay, don't say anything about it. Just bypass it.
Yeah, I'd stay
why,
away.
Why eat it? Eat some goat's head or eat fish eyes instead.
Yeah, I'd just stick to the white bread.
So you're going to a, you said you're Jewish, but the house you're going to is a wasp household?
Yeah, wasp. There'll probably be booze, scotch.
But what a minute, are they celebrating a Jewish holiday? Like, are they doing like a Jewish New Year's festival for you?
No, it's just a going away party.
Oh, so it has nothing to do with a religious event.
Oh, no, no, no.
Well, so, but she's probably going to have ham there, right? She'll have some ham, right?
Yeah, probably some ham.
She'll have rolled ham, and they roll it a certain way, the wasp. They don't even put it out flat. They roll it. I like prosciutto myself. Very, very fine prosciutto. I like Parma ham. Do you eat prosciutto?
Yeah, I eat ham. I eat ham. There'll be people from the church there, so they're very religious.
They are religious?
Yeah, yeah. Ultimately, if you pray over the food, then...
All right, well, don't eat the fava beans. That's what I would say. Leave it to those who eat it and don't get sick from it. Don't take a chance. I don't eat beans at all. I don't like tacos. There's nothing in a taco. Yesterday, I went to a chain. Supposed to be healthy taco chain. So I said, all right, I'll have the shrimp taco, and you also get a langostino lobster one for $8. I opened it up. You know what was in there? Four shrimp the size of a pinky's nail. The rest was cheese and beans. So I scraped out the cheese because I don't eat dairy. I threw the beans away because I don't eat beans. The bread was saturated with the dairy, so I didn't eat the bread. I was left with four little shrimp and some unknown quantity called langostino lobster for $9. I would have been better off with a ham sandwich. I'll be back. I have reinvented myself and reinvented talk radio. I told you what's coming after the elections in November. I told you what's going to happen. It's sad. I'm not doing this exam because I want to. But after the election in November, when the Dems get kicked out and the Repubes come in with their big lies, people are going to turn off from talk radio. It's going to be like a desert for a year and a half till the presidential election, maybe a year and 9, 10 months. And only I will survive. Others will stay in the business, but my show is going to thrive because each day is different. Sure, I'm going to do stories every day because we got to keep an eye on Obama and the socialists. And, of course, the Arab street, as you well know, because they can't wait until their flag is planted in your town square, to be very frank about the situation we're facing. But, Mondays is going to be like movies and books. Tuesdays is going to be this. Wednesday, finance. Thursday, health and nutrition. Friday, the Bible. You're going to look forward to it every day, and I know that the show is going to grow and grow and grow. So let's take some calls. Medford Ed, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mike. I'm just the guy that put the billboard up in Medford. I hope I didn't...
You are. Well, man, what motivated you to pay your own money to put up Borders Language Culture? They're taking it away. Why'd you do that, Ed?
Well... You sit around and talk with your friends, you're talking to the choir, and it hit me one day, the old adage, put your money where your mouth is. And so I inquired and...
So your billboard says Borders, Language, and Culture, they're disappearing. Have you heard from the President, the Secretary of State, the General Petraeus, and others telling you to take it down because it may provoke the Muslim street?
No.
No, not yet. They haven't called. The FBI hasn't visited you yet for being a patriot. Not yet. They have. They're busy... seeing if anyone's going to burn a Quran in Gainesville.
No, nobody's contacted me. I just, I'd heard that you had, somebody had called in and said that they'd seen the billboard, and I was curious if anybody was seeing it.
Well, yeah, well, my producer, Doug, saw it on the way to work, and he sent it to me, and I put it up on michaelsavage.com. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm so impressed with what you've done with your money, Ed, by using one of my primary slogans, Borders, Language, Culture, in a billboard. in Medford, Oregon, then I'm going to give you a free copy when it comes out of Trickle Up Poverty. You're a very lucky man because although they're printing well over 150,000 copies, I hear they're going to go back to press. It's selling like crazy. You're going to get one of the first copies, Ed. So, guys, take Ed's name and address. Don't share it with anyone, obviously, but we're going to forward it on. We're going to give him a free copy because Trickle Up Poverty is going to be such a sold-out book. Now let's take another call here on the Savage Nation. New York WOR, Paul, go ahead, please. What's your call about today?
I just want to talk to you about our ethnic food today.
Go ahead.
Okay, when I was a kid, my parents used to make me eat tripe. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's the stomach lining of a cow.
Of course. I've seen tripa in Italian restaurants.
It's a very distinguished taste, though. You have to get used to it. I just remember smelling that coming from the kitchen as a child. I just know that I'd be sitting at
the I think many ethnic groups, remember, many of these dishes were the foods of poverty, but they were very nutritious. What is tripe? It's the intestine of a cow, is it not? And what was it stuffed with? What did they stuff it with? Of course, they boiled it first, but what was it stuffed with?
It's the lining of this, the actual lining of the stomach. It looks like a honeycomb, and it was just boiled and boiled with potatoes and hot pepper and string beans and basically whatever you had in the refrigerator.
And what else did they what else did they feed you on the table there?
Oh, the other one, it was gabutzel. That's how it's said in Italian. It's a lamb's head.
A lamb's head. Oh, that would be very, very sensitive to bring it to the faculty lounge at NYU when they have a vegetarian meeting. Bring them a lamb's head.
They would love
And while you're at it, when you go to NYU, to the faculty lounge in social sciences, bring them a horse's head as well, Paul. Bring them a horse's head to the faculty lounge at Columbia Law. Bring them a nice horse's head.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I like my mama's food, it's so good to me. Her meatballs have the spice that make them taste so nice. A little wine after we dine makes you feel so doggone fine. My mama's a cooking.
All right, welcome to a Savage Nation on a Thursday day. We're talking about a food and a nutrition. And I'm focusing today on ethnic nutrition because many of us take pride in our ethnic background, as we should. And we eat what we think are ethnic meals, but in fact, I'm sorry to tell you, most of the ethnic meals that we're eating are not ethnic meals at all. Example, case in point, Italian food is not really Italian food that the average Italian ate, let's say, 150 years ago in Italy. The Italian diet then was quite sparse. It might have been a whole grain spaghetti or a whole grain noodle on the farm with some vegetables with very little animal protein. And perhaps some cheese products because they didn't kill the animal. But literally, they didn't slaughter the animal every time they ate a meal. And what you're eating is holiday meals three times a day, and you're getting the degenerative diseases associated with overly rich diets. It's the same with almost every other ethnic group on earth. And so you'd say, Jewish food. Oh, I'm going to go to the deli and have a corned beef sandwich with a pickle. And that's not Jewish food. That is 19th century holiday Polish food. Jewish food is Yemenite food. You want to really eat Jewish food? Eat a Yemenite diet. That is the southern tip of the Arabian Peninsula. And what the Yemenites eat is what the ancient Israelites probably ate. And that's why some of us wind up with diabetes and heart attacks so young, because we're eating diets that we're not adapted to. Did you know this? You say, oh, come on, how do you know that? How do you know that? How do you know any of this stuff? Oh, Well, I trust my doctor. He tells me to eat what I want and just take Lipitor. And then if I get sick from any food, just take something to digest it. That's all. And if that doesn't work, they'll cut us open and remove something. All right, well, you could live that way if you want. You know what I'm saying? While the pig, the crow, the squid, and like creatures are forbidden by the Hebrew dietary laws, saturated fats, sucrose, and chemical additives are the unclean or forbidden foods in the etiology of internal health of rational man, I wrote. Page 138 of The Skeptical Nutritionist. I'm a genius. I really am. Boy, I was smart when I was young. That's really a good paragraph. Look at that one. Where the pig, the crow, the squid, and like creatures are forbidden by the Hebrew dietary laws, saturated fats, sucrose, and chemical additives are the unclean or forbidden in the etiology of internal health of rational man. That's really good stuff. And then I wrote, I support tradition, but urge my religious friends to eliminate dangerous components of their foods developed and introduced long after biblical laws were written. But it's like talking to yourself. You go to a Jewish group, they're sticking their... They're eating Stella d'Oro, a cake in their face every 2 minutes, a sweet. They wonder why they have diabetes, and they look so bad at 50, so many. I'm serious. They've lost all concept of diet. You can't live that way. It's impossible. Some can. It is true. Some people can eat anything. I call them nutritional rogues, by the way. These are the people who you say, oh, my grandfather lived to 104. You're full of crap, Savage, because he ate everything you just said he shouldn't eat, and he drank a bottle of scotch. I said, so he's a nutritional rogue. You try it. Get back to me when you're 50. See how long you last. Right? What else did I want to tell you about? I want to read your paragraph, introduction, why I am a skeptic. Oh, this is an interesting one. I quoted Galileo, who wrote, there is no scientific work that only one man can write. Now, that was written by Galileo in the Middle Ages. Listen to this, Al Gore, you schmuck. Al Gore, schmuck. And every other putz in the academic establishment who said that all the science is in on global warming. Schmucks, idiots. You don't even know what science means, you schmucks. Here's what Galileo wrote, putz. There is no scientific work that only one man can write, schmuck. Galileo wrote that, but Al Gore said all the science is in on global warming. And then the idiots in the media said all the science is in on global warming. They're heretics. We know the earth is flat. And anyone who says the earth is round is not a scientist, said Al Gore. And then the schmucks on MSNBC snickered and went, yeah. Introduction, why I am a skeptic. Food is such a personal thing, and how anybody can dare suggest diets for others continually shocks me. And repugnant cuisine is scarcely the road to health and long life, I wrote in 1983. One more paragraph. Let's see. Hey, oh, this is good. Now, there are fine books on becoming vegetarian. Some of my closest friends are vegetarians. That's a joke. Yet we must not seek to declare as an objective truth that the plant world holds our major key to longevity. It may be true that George Bernard Shaw, Tolstoy, Wagner, Shelley, Byron, Thoreau, and other illustrious figures were vegetable eaters, but so was Hitler. In fact, the German dictator's manic depressive mood swings and associated unexpected aggressive outbreaks might easily have been somewhat controlled with a good dose of high-quality protein and unrefined carbohydrates and with a steady intake of a good vitamin mineral supplement on a regular basis. Better, Hitler should have gnawed on a big leg of lamb once a day and had a glass of wine. The well-known photo of Hitler and Eva Braun at Berchtesgaden with the maniac passed out in an armchair after eating lunch is not an image the hypoglycemically attuned researcher is likely to forget, I wrote. Diet and behavior vary in too many people for us to look for a simple set of rules as our salvation from too intense swings of mood. So, I mean, I wrote some nice stuff. You know, Hitler was a vegetarian and didn't drink either. And he was always starving. He could never get enough of anything because he was always hungry, so he invaded one country after another and killed too many people. As I said, if he ate a leg of lamb and had a drink once in a while, the whole course of history would have been altered. It's absolutely true. The book was way ahead of its time. 1981, Macmillan Publishing, out of print. I still own the copyrights, so don't rip it off. I think I'll reprint it now. A Strategy for Designing a Nutritional Program. As a night, it's a good book. Not for sale. Not for sale. And I want to tell you that the word food fascism, the phrase, I think I coined it on page 6. Food fascism. I was against it then. The bookstores aligned with correct diets for the unmet masses. Social engineers, you see, I was against them. And then I wrote, food fascism, like other varieties of the social disease, requires lieutenants to proselytize. Not wishing to participate in any form of totalitarianism, I wrote, I intend not to dictate a correct diet for a fictional reader. Now, if only Michelle Obama knew that. She dictates to you what you should eat, and then she eats ice cream in Martha's Vineyard. And you're not supposed to notice that. She came back 8 pounds heavier. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The king has no clothes. We're living through it. Every day we see the victory garden that's outside the White House, and then grow your vegetables and eat good, and you're not eating right. They're going to arrest you if your child's obese. Take them away from you. And every time they're on vacation, there they are in Dearborn, Michigan, and they're eating ice cream cones. What the heck? Not good for you to eat like that. Not healthy at all. You know, practice what you preach, my friend. So now that I've had my background, given you my background, we're going to go to you, the caller, and I'm going to ask you what ethnic foods you had, you ate growing up, and what ethnic foods you found most disgusting that your parents made you eat. And let's see what else. Which members of your family experienced health problems as a direct result of eating so-called traditional ethnic foods? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Here we go. Ready for the calls? Here they come. Charlie in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, you're my hero. I look up to you as a slightly older, much smarter and wiser big brother. To me, you're familiar. Capiche?
I mean, yeah, hey, beautiful. No, I take it as a
Corps veteran, and I can do it, sir. Hey, my question
So, Charlie,
is,
where are you in witness protection in Florida?
Hey, here in sunny Odessa, downtown Odessa, Florida. My question is, I was talking to my orthopedic surgeon, and he was telling me that the red meats are the biggest culprit for arthritis, in his opinion, and I do have gout.
You know, I'll tell you the truth. There is some, I mean, this is the current thinking today. Today, red meat is the culprit for everything. And you see men in their 40s smiling and saying with a certain degree of pride, I have not had red meat in 12 years. Well, I'm not sure that red meat is the culprit for every disease on the planet, personally. My advice in general to people is to eat some red meat on a limited basis. Let's start with that. And the reason I say that is not to be a wise guy or a contrarian. It's because, first of all, we eat too much of it. That's number one. And you're not supposed to eat that every day. Let's be clear. You're not supposed to have a steak at night and a meatloaf sandwich for lunch and ham and eggs for breakfast. It'll kill you. So that's number one. Number two, the reason you do need some red meat, in my opinion, is because red meat contains certain nutrients that are not found in anything else, such as carnitine, a little-known nutrient called carnitine, which gives people energy. Have you noticed that when you stop eating meat, you lose energy?
Yes, I do. And if I don't get my B12, I feel sluggish too, Dr. Sam.
Yeah, well, thank you. So that's an example. And a lot of vegetarians do not get any B12, and they don't know why they're dragging their butts around. You know, you see so many young women who are eating vegetarian diets, and they're so sickly and emaciated and depressed and anxious and neurotic, they don't even understand it's related to their diet. But you also said something else. I heard you quickly. You said you suffer gout. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. And they said that the coffee now is supposed to be good for that. Is that true?
Wait, you said the coffee is what?
They said that drinking coffee helps the gout because of the I guess the bioflavins or the different antioxidants in it. I think that was a new study that came out recently.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. Coffee is a health food. There's no question about it. Coffee is one of the great secret health foods of the world. We have to thank our Arab brothers for that. You know that. It came from Ethiopia. The Arabs brought it into the Middle East, and then from there it went around the world. I mean, that's one thing given to the world, very much like corn was given to the world by the people from South America. So there are some amazing stories when you study food, as I have. But you're asking something specific about gout. Gout is generally related to diet, that you know. You've seen the relationship, haven't you, between what you eat and the gout outbreaks that you have?
Yes, sir. And if I don't get enough water, if I don't flush my kidneys out enough, I really do suffer from that. And if I watch my diet, I notice that I don't have to take any medicine, but yes, if I get off the diet, if I get too many meats.
I'll tell you something else about gout. Have you noticed that if you eat certain kind of Do you drink wine?
A little bit of red wine, but I like dark beer. But I noticed if I have a flare-up, they'd say that the beer is like one of the worst.
Bingo. Things. Beer is one of the worst. Chianti wine is terrible because they contain traces of tyramine. Tyramine triggers gout. Did you know that?
Sure.
I mean, are you aware of the substance called tyramine?
No, I've never heard of that, Dr. Shatter.
It's a very interesting. These are obscure facts of nutrition that very few people know. But this is, remember, what I got my PhD in from the University of California. So you want to watch out for beer. You want to watch out for certain cheeses. You know not to eat, I'm trying to remember now. I'm trying to recall it all. This is 20 years, 30 years later, and I haven't been in this field in so long. But if I recall, tyramine, I know tyramine levels are distinctly related to gout-like reactions, right? But what I want to do is give you some foods to avoid to reduce these compounds in food that cause a dramatic increase in blood pressure, for example, can also provoke gout. Will you bear with me as I look it up in my book? Because I don't want to shoot my mouth off, Charlie. I have one question before the break. Charlie, you say you have gout from time to time. Does it affect your trigger finger?
You know what? I work out with my trigger finger all the time, but sometimes it will swell up, so I have to use my off hand. So I keep both of my trigger fingers in great shape.
Okay, now then you can work for me. Okay, hang on, Charlie. I'll be right back. If you don't like this stuff, I'll go back to Obama maniacs and, Barney Frank. I could talk about him because he's living through the days of war. Remember last year, Barney Frank said, me and Rahm are living through the days of war after they ripped off America for trillions of dollars. No wonder they had such a good time last year. But to get back to gout. Remember? Do you claim that, listen to me, let's say you're sensitive to certain foods. You don't feel good when you eat these foods, pickled herring, certain cheeses, certain wines, certain vinegars, meat extracts. Why? Because these foods likely contain the substance called tyramine, which results from the fermentative process or as a result of the microbial action during aging or storage. So what does that mean to you? Well, it means you might be getting your gout-like reactions. You might get arthritic-like reactions. You might have some other reactions from these vasoactive amines that are present in certain foods. Do you react to sauerkraut, chocolate, stored fish, Chianti wine, beer, or other fermented or stored foods? Well, you may be reacting to the histamine that are contained in these foods. Okay, let me explain what that means. You ever take antihistamines when you have an allergic reaction? Sure you have. Antihistamines. So it fights the histamines, or it neutralizes the histamine reaction in your body, and your allergic reaction goes down, correct? Well, there are certain foods that contain histamines that provoke allergic reactions or gout. These could be the foods I just mentioned to you. And that's why I'm saying it's very important to study these. So you have to know which foods we're talking about. So I have a chart on page 151. I'm going to reprint the book now because it's for sale now for $200, I see someone told me. As a used book, would you believe it? I don't even know what my books sell for. I never look at it. While Hannity was learning how to hit nails against chalkboard, while O'Reilly was learning how to use the loofah at Harvard on co-eds, while Rush was learning how to be a caddy, I was writing expert books in the field of nutrition. And they're all good men. I mean, I have nothing against any of them. While he was sleeping off an alcoholic binge, as a youth. Foods reported containing tyramine, page 150. So very, very rich in tyramine, cheddar cheese, terrible, avoid it. Camembert cheese, horrible. Stilton cheese, don't touch it. Cheeses in general are good to provoke these diseases in you, these reactions. But guess which doesn't? Provolone. I love it and my dog loves it. Provolone is not a bologna. I eat a provolone because it's low in tyramine.
Savage.
I've just scratched the surface here on this subject. I wrote a whole book on beer once. I got so into beer making, I wrote a whole book on beer. I made beer. visited breweries. I got obsessed with additives in beer. I personally now only drink, where I can, German beer, because German beers, Bavarian beers in particular, are brewed to the strictest code in the world, the Bavarian purity law. And you may not know this, but brewers in Germany, Switzerland, and Luxembourg are the only brewers in the world who are prohibited by law from using anything but barley malt, hops, water, and yeast in their beers. But you should know this. Export varieties of these beers are only required to meet the standards of the nation and import them. So you could get a fine German beer, which is additive-free in Germany, but it could enter your country, the U.S., containing chemicals. The only exception being Bavarian brewed beers, which are still brewed according to the Bavarian brewing law. So the addition of chemical agents to beer happens to be an ancient practice. Not all of the chemicals are bad, but I'd rather not have chemicals. You should know that back in 1309, it was already a problem with wine and beer. 1309, English wine inspectors were required to take an oath to protect the public from unscrupulous winemakers. So it goes back a very long way. You look at the Bible, it's about weights and measures, because there were people who were, you know, jiggling around the weights and changing them. And don't assume that the government is keeping an eye out for you. You know, I want to just talk one more thing about beer. You may not know this, because I had an uncle who recently died. He lived quite long, but he got his first heart attack. It was out of the blue in his late 30s. He was a postman in New York. He was in decent shape. He got a heart attack, and then he retired. And he lived a very long time after that. You know, after a heart attack, you'll have a limited life, basically, no matter what the doctors tell you. And I couldn't understand it, although my father had a heart attack, which, God rest his soul, was probably related to the smoking dad, I'm sorry to say, and the diet and the stress you were under, the horrible things you lived through. It was not mere alcohol that was to blame for my uncle's heart attack. I researched this. Did you know that there were a series of fatal heart attacks among heavy beer drinkers between the year 1964 and 1966? Yeah, who cares? Well, you don't care. Turn the show off. Go listen to something else. I don't care. So between 64 and 66, series of fatal heart attacks, who amongst heavy beer drinkers? Not because of the alcohol. What was discovered was that cobalt sulfate was used at that time by several brewers to make thick-lasting beer heads and upset the metabolism of heart cells. Researchers believed that cobalt locks up alpha-lipoic acid, which is needed by the vitamin thiamine, to complete an essential reaction in the metabolic pathway of the Krebs cycle. What does that mean to you? It means the heart cells of the beer drinkers were thus destroyed by energy starvation. Well, cobalt has since been banned in beer. But there may be other chemicals in beer that I think you should know about, because there's quite a few of them. Gum arabic, EDTA, papain, bromelain. May not be bad. Certain enzymes, heptylparaben, hydroxybenzoate, caramel FD&C, blue number 1, red number 40, yellow number 5. I don't like artificial flavors and colors in my food at all. I don't like them in any food. You know what's funny? I like most men over a certain age, I take the baby aspirin every other night. I personally know it's beneficial. The small aspirin, you know, you take them and it reduces the risk of a little blowout in the middle of the night where they find a stiff in the bed. So the fact is that you take the little aspirin, but I noticed something. I noticed that even Bayer, and I only use Bayer because the manufacturing of drugs is so fraught with fraud. You got a bunch of shysters now in the drug business and the vitamin business. They have pill pressing machines running in their garages day and night. You have no idea what they're putting in vitamins or in drugs. So, I mean, I studied this. I used to work for the best in the field. I know what goes on in factories. You got to understand that you're talking to an expert here. So I usually use Bayer aspirin because it's a drug standard, number one, the least amount of impurities, number two. And I was very disappointed in Bayer when I read the label to find out they were using a dye in the aspirin to give it color. Because aspirin, to me, was always dye-free. Who told them to put yellow number whatever in an aspirin, I asked myself. Why must they put dye in an aspirin when so many millions of men are using it? Why would they put dye in it? Was it some marketing decision? A lunatic who said it'll sell better if it's yellow? I can't believe what I look at. I knew doctors who were so smart 30 years ago. They would say, look, if you're occasionally going to use a Valium, use the 5 milligram instead of the 10 milligram because the dye in the 5 milligram is rather innocuous, while the blue dye used in a 10 milligram is very carcinogenic. That's how far we had gotten, and we know a lot about this stuff. Many of us in this field know an awful lot about it. Most of this knowledge has been lost. We're almost like ancient wisdom today. It's been lost completely. You know, last night I went to dinner with a friend of mine who was one of the pioneers in the field of nutrition and health. He's a great man. Very few people know of Dr. Kunyon. I don't know if he's listening. He's a friend of mine. I don't gain or lose anything by mentioning it. I love Richard. MD, psychiatrist, went into the nutrition field way back in the 60s. Knows more about it than anyone I know. And yet you probably don't know much about him. He was a colleague of the great Dr. Cathcart and Dr. Pauling. But these old-timers, and even myself included, though I hate to consider myself in that field, in that category, I mean, we knew a lot. We knew a lot, and I was the most populist writer of all of them. I published more books with more information than anybody in America that was good information. Well, I wasn't working for a particular company publishing a book pushing their product. Not that that's necessarily bad, but that's not what I did. I wrote the best books possible. So the point is, thank you for listening, and I'm going to try to do this every Thursday, not to the exclusion of the news, which I'll do the minute I'm not going to take a break. It would have been a good break now, but I'm not going to jump to it. Men seem more susceptible to memory problems than women. Here's a news story I just got to make it more newsy. Elderly men are more likely to suffer memory problems than women, new research shows. Well, that's logical. Men have more things to forget. Symbol shot. The study included 2,000 people aged 70 to 89 in Olmsted County, Minnesota, who were interviewed, blah, blah, blah. 14% of the participants had mild cognitive, blah, 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 blah. The study funded by the U.S. National Institute on Aging and Mayo Clinic Alzheimer's Research, blah, 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 also found that MCI was more common among people who had a lower level of education or were never married. What? What's MCI? They give it a name. Oh, mild cognitive impairment. That means memory. Everything, they have to give an initial and a new name. You have to go and look at a dictionary, MCI. That's so a person can say, oh, I love the kid who name and have to give three. They wound up working for their father's corrugated cardboard factory. But today already they got a disease and they get a right to take the test 8 times. And the mother gets to take the test home and take it for them. And when she fails it, she gets her husband, a lawyer, to sue the school because they didn't give him proper tutoring. That's the country I live in. The reason I studied so hard is because I didn't want to wind up a dummy like the kid who couldn't do it to pass the test. My father would have ridiculed me. He said, what are you, a stupid idiot? You can't do any better? Study a little more. So I studied a little more. I did the best I could. There's such a thing. It doesn't mean you're a criminal or you're amoral. It means that you were given a little backwards ability here. I'd rather have a guy who's didn't have to overcome. I'd rather have a guy flying the plane who didn't have a trouble passing a test and didn't spatially see things upside down. I'm glad at airlines. That makes me feel great. I'm glad to hear it. I'd rather have a guy fly with a drink in him who passed with flying colors. World War II, they flew after taking a few drinks. I mean, it's crazy. The whole thing's nuts. Everything's upside down. The government, once it gets involved, twists everything, makes it wrong. Everything. Learning disability. Oh, poor Johnny has a learning disability. Whoa, that qualifies for two tutors per hour at the government expense, and the father gets to sue because he's the lawyer. Oh, I'm going to get all of the sensitive parents. I'm going to boycott your show. How dare you call my poor son? Here it comes. Every time you step on someone's... What about the kids who don't have to have the special tutors? They just study harder than your kid. They don't have a mother and a father for lawyer. Lawyers for parents. Come on. Get off with this. Lawsuits already. They just cracked down on a couple here in San Francisco. The father was a lawyer. And they said that the son had, I don't know, one of these dyslexia, special tutoring that only a special company could provide. It turned out the father, the lawyer, had set up the company, which didn't exist, and the state was spending hundreds of thousands a year on special instructors that didn't exist, that the father was providing that he didn't provide. Can you believe this? Now, this is 1 out of 1,000, you say. How many others are getting away? How much can this country take? How much can a nation take? How much can we take of this until everything breaks down? Answer, it broke down already. You're looking at a nation in a breakdown. It's already had the breakdown. It had the breakdown already. That's all. So, while you are sleeping, borders, language, and culture are disappearing, says the billboard. We're losing all these. Facebook users are insecure, narcissistic, and have low self-esteem. New study says using Facebook is the online equivalent of staring at yourself in the mirror. Oh, God, what does that mean? I have a Facebook and a Twitter account. I got it like 6 months ago. I don't know. I was told everyone has it, you know. No idea what it is. I have an assistant. He posts articles for me, like Michael Savage said this, Michael Savage said that. I don't receive anything on Facebook because I don't want to answer 12,000 a day, you know, in hieroglyphics with two thumbs. What do people do on Facebook? They're basically, it's a dating site, isn't it? Fundamentally, they use like, I'm an expert in medical sciences, but what are you doing tonight? Meet me in the Motel 6 in the dining room. I'll take you to a fine dinner. We're having Scottish cuisine tonight. You and I were going to McDonald's. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is big news. It is very big news. The FBI, the U.S. government, the U.S. military, the State Department all told this little preacher, don't burn the books. And he said he had a dream last night that God said, don't burn the books because the Ground Zero Mosque is going to be moved. Who knows? Maybe the guy's a prophet for all we know. You don't know who a prophet is. What do you think? Obama's a prophet? You think General Petraeus is a prophet? You think, I mean, who's a prophet? You can really tell who a prophet is? Where they come with a label? Maybe this man is an instrument of God. Maybe he never was going to burn the Quran. Maybe he did it to attract attention to the fact that it's a one-way street with the so-called peace-loving Muslim. Interesting. Now another church is going to burn Qurans. That's all. Well, they put a lot of pressure on him. Interesting how I was banned from entering Britain, the only member of the American media ever banned from entering a Western nation, and not one word from the president, the secretary of state, General Petraeus, or the media. Isn't it interesting? It's actually a more fundamental loss of liberty that I've had than burning a Quran, when you think about it. It's only a book. I'm a human being. Isn't it interesting what moves a government to action? Trump offers to buy out investor of Ground Zero Mosque rejected. Yeah, whatever. Who's he going to borrow it from? He has nice lettuce, though, at the resort there. Very nice. Good shrimp. Very nice. No, he did a nice smorgasbord. I was there last year. It was very nice. He does a good buffet. Nothing negative. Not being a wise guy, he does a nice... You could tell everything about a buffet by the lettuce. Most people think that lettuce is just the background, like, you know, it could be wilted or... You can't be. I'm one of the people who checked the lettuce in order to whether I'm going to eat the stuff on the buffet first. I told him, I said, Mr. Trump, you have an excellent buffet. The lettuce is excellent. He said to me, you are right. The lettuce is excellent. He apparently supervises every detail, which is why he's a successful man, unlike people who don't look at every detail of their business. I watch every detail of my business, my website, my books, my show, every word, every detail. And I hope thus far you've enjoyed my show on nutrition today and ethnic nutrition. Nobody in America could do what I did today. It's a one-off show. Impossible. I mean, how do you follow this act? Last week was hard enough and excellent. Tomorrow, Friday, I got to do the Bible. Ah, the Bible's easy. See, it's actually very easy for me to do it. First of all, I've written so many excellent books that are still so valid 30 years later that there's information that I could use for the next 10 years. That's number one. Number two, how can you ever run out of things to say from the Bible? All I got to do is read a portion of the Bible once a week and give you the political ramifications of what that Bible reading may mean. How could you not want to hear that, even if you don't believe in the Bible? So interesting. That's why I'm doing it. It's keeping me interested. You know what I'm saying? So now let's go to the call. Here's a good call here on something out of Chicago. Vicky, go ahead. What's the ethnic food you wanted to call about, Vicky?
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you I come from a three-ethnicity family growing up, and I've got a best and a worst. And,
yeah. Tell us what the best ethnic connection is.
Okay, it's from the Czech side of the family.
Yeah.
And it was chicken paprikash.
Absolutely. Paprika is a health food. One of the great ethnic health foods or spices is paprika. Paprika is a fabulous food, a fabulous spice, very, very rich in B vitamins. Did you know that?
No.
You know it is. It's a variety of the chili pepper, of course. You know that.
No, I didn't know that either. I've learned a lot today.
Yeah. And what's the worst ethnic part of your background?
From the Polish side, it was breaded fried slices of Spam served with elbow macaroni with ketchup on it.
That sounds like something Joe Biden would serve in the White House.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Come on over. We're having some fried Spam tonight with ketchup on it. Thanks for sharing a laugh with me. Yeah, I mean, did you hear the thing I did where I played Henry Miller talking about his family? It was one of the greatest things. He says, we had everyone in our family, drunkards, crazy people, thieves, gamblers. I loved that. It was so good because everyone likes to glorify their family, that everyone was a saint. But if you look back in your family, there's everything in it at some point. But we like to forget it. You know what I mean? So we like to forget some of the problems that came along with the lineage there. Millions of years of evolution. Well, my grand dog, Teddy, is ruffling around here in the studio. A friend of mine gave me that name. He's an animal lover, like I am. And he said he calls his dogs grand dogs because his children haven't had children yet. So my grand dog, Teddy, you know what he does at the end of hour number two? He starts throwing pillows. He starts standing up. He stretches. He starts throwing pillows around. He's going for the second inning stretch on the show. He's getting ready to go outside to relieve himself, have a drink of water, chase a bird, have a piece of provolone, get ready for an evening's entertainment. What a little character. What a little character. How could you not love animals? I don't understand people who don't. I really don't. I love animals. I eat them, says Rush Limbaugh. I'm a conservative. Remember when the oil blew out in the Gulf of Mexico and Nervy said, you know, oh, the birds are dying. Well, I call them cooked birds. Really gives conservatism a real great name. Love it. Just love it, Rush. You do a lot of service for the conservative movement that way, showing people what a stupid oaf you can be. I mean, for a man of such intelligence and insight, why must you portray the stereotype of the ugly, dumb conservative, I ask myself over and over again? Oh, I eat anything I want. Oh, I smoke cigars. You may as well suck a tailpipe, that's all. Smoking a cigar is the same thing as putting your mouth around a tailpipe of a car. Trust me on that one. Look what it did to Fidel Castro's brain all these years. Turned him into a socialist. I'm joking at that point. Okay, at a certain point, I'm just pulling your cigar. Quran burning called off Ground Zero Mosque to be moved, says preacher. From his brain to God's will.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If he's listening, I just hope he understands that what he's proposing to do is completely contrary to our values as Americans. That this country has been built on the notions of religious freedom and religious tolerance. And as a very practical matter, as Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces of the United States, I just want him to understand that this stunt that he is talking about pulling could greatly endanger our young men and women in uniform.
Well, here's what we have to talk about in the Savage Nation today. All the stories that you may not have seen. The preacher in Florida who threatened to burn Qurans was talked out of it by, let's see, the president, the military, the secretary of state, and all the fanatic Muslims on the earth. Apparently the president, the head of the military, and the secretary of state took the side of the Muslims, not the side of free speech. Burning Qurans is unkind to Muslims who mean us no harm, says General Petraeus. To me, that's laughable. It's just absurd. It is outrageously insane. It's unbelievable to me. So, liberals, as you know, couldn't care less about the First Amendment. They promote hate crimes. They promote speech codes. They promote free speech zones known as America, drop dead. They go around the country tearing down every reference to God from the public square because of the ACLU's lawsuits. And whenever you see a liberal screaming about our precious Constitution, what they're really talking about are the rights of Muslims to build a mosque at Ground Zero, the right of strippers to appear in an elementary school, the right of newspapers to publish classified military documents, the right of pornographers, murderers, traitors, terrorists, child molesters, and saboteurs, as well as flag burners, or old ladies living on any NEA grants performing sex acts on stage. That's what they mean by freedom of speech. And so, therefore, as I say to you, while I'm glad in a way that the Quran burning was called off, I'm not glad to see the entire government come out against it. Because, let me tell you this way, Obama said that if we permit the preacher to burn those Qurans, there will be more terrorist attacks on the U.S. and on our soldiers because of these incensed Muslims. Well, if I can recall correctly, there was no Afghanistan war, no Iraq war, no Guantanamo on September 10th, 2001. And yet Osama bin Laden was recruiting peaceful Muslims back then. So the idea of recruiting them because of these acts, can we end that now? The fact of the matter is, I'm glad he's not going to burn them, but frankly, he had a right to do so if he wanted to. And I am frankly depressed to see a government taking the side of fanatics in the Muslim world. 1-800-449-8255. On the Savage Nation today, we're talking about nutrition, and here were some of the health questions for the program. We're talking mainly about ethnic diets, and I ask you, and we'll ask you, what ethnic foods did you eat in your family while you were growing up? Did your diet change as you got older? Did you drop some of these so-called ethnic recipes? And did members of your own family experience health problems as the result of eating so-called traditional ethnic foods? And speaking of ethnic foods, what was the most horrendously disgusting item your parents made you eat as a child, telling you it was part of your culture? And did you ever try to go vegetarian or vegan or go on the raw foods diet? How did it make you feel? What is the worst thing you've had a medical doctor prescribe for your child? And what's the worst experience you've ever had in a doctor's waiting room? Those are some of the health questions that we are talking about on the Savage Nation. How often have you been on an airplane and you ask the flight attendant, can I have some peanuts? And she says, I'm sorry, someone has a peanut allergy on the plane. So there's food fascism. One cretinous, legal-oriented lunatic tells you you can't have peanuts in the airplane because she is allergic to peanuts. Now, what would happen if you brought your own pack of peanuts on an airplane, and when the light goes off, you order a drink, and you will take out your peanut? You're telling me that that person's going to tell you to put your peanuts away? What a lawsuit that would be. I'd say, I dare you to make me put my peanuts away. This is such a fallacy, it's beyond comprehension. Yes, there are people who are allergic to peanuts, of course. They have no right to tell you not to eat peanuts on an airplane. The reason that happened is because of lawsuits against the airlines. And so, therefore, they decided it's better not to serve peanuts, all because of one creep who says, I have a peanut allergy. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, with the ninth anniversary of 9/11 coming up, it seems many have forgotten the feelings we had and what we went through as a nation. Joining us now is Brigitte Gabriel with her thoughts on the 9/11 anniversary. Brigitte, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. I'm delighted to be with you again. As you know, Michael, this is a very difficult time of year for me. I, like most Americans, feel special pain on September 11th. You know, that feeling of betrayal, the feeling of sorrow, the feeling of helplessness and loss of so many great Americans who died that day. But for me, it strikes a special chord because it reminds me of my childhood and the attack I experienced.
Well, yeah, let's remind the audience about that story.
My 9/11 happened to me when I was 10 years old in 1975 in Lebanon. That's when the Muslims blew up my home, bringing it down, burying me under the rubble, wounded, drinking my own blood as the perpetrators shouted Allahu Akbar. My only crime was that I was a Christian living in a Christian town. I ended up in a hospital for 2.5 months being treated for my injuries. And I would ask my parents, as I laid in a hospital bed hooked to IVs in both arms, and look into their eyes and ask them, why did they do this to us? And my father would tell me, well, that's because we are Christians. The Muslims consider us infidels and they want to kill us. So I learned, Michael, at the age of 10 years old, that I was wanted dead simply because I was an infidel.
What happened after the hospital?
I ended up leaving the hospital and coming back home, but my home was no longer the home I left. My new home became an 8x10 underground bomb shelter where I lived for 7 years, from the age of 10 till the age of 17, in pitch darkness, freezing cold, drinking stale water and eating grass to live. At the age of 13, I dressed in my burial clothes, going to bed at night, waiting to be slaughtered. And by the age of 20, I had buried most of my friends killed by Muslims. Here, we were not Americans living in New York or Britons living in London. We were Arab Christians living in Lebanon.
So many here don't realize how great it is to live in America.
As a victim and a survivor of Islamic terror, I was amazed when I saw Americans waking up on September 12, 2001, and asking themselves, why do they hate us? The psychoanalyst experts were coming up with all sorts of excuses as to what did we do to offend the Muslim world. But if America and the West, Michael, were paying attention to the Middle East, they would not have had to ask the question. Simply put, they hate us because we are defined in their eyes by one simple word, infidels.
Well, but the media keeps telling us that we don't understand the peaceful side. The terrorists just need to be understood.
Under the banner of Islam, La ilaha illallah Muhammadun Rasulullah. None is God except Allah. Muhammad is the messenger of Allah. They murdered Jewish children in Israel, massacred Christians in Lebanon, killed Copts in Egypt, Assyrians in Syria, Hindus in India, Armenians in Turkey, and expelled almost 900,000 Jews from Muslim land. We Middle Eastern infidels paid the price then. Now infidels worldwide are paying the price for their indifference and short-sightedness.
So you're, of course, saying it's not a left or right issue.
America has been attacked under different administrations, no matter who lived in the White House, whether Democrats or Republicans, since 1979. America was attacked in 1979 with the hostages in Iran. Carter, a Democrat, was in office. America was attacked again in 1983 with the blowing up of the Marines in Lebanon under the Reagan administration, a Republican. America was attacked again under George Bush Senior administration. America was attacked under the Clinton administration, a Democrat. It was actually under President Clinton that the Taliban trained 10,000 al-Qaeda members in Afghanistan.
Well, it seems the left has forgotten that.
These people, Michael, were not being trained for entertainment. They were being trained to attack the United States of America. George Bush Jr. and Dick Cheney were not even a blurb on the American political landscape. It was also under President Clinton that the World Trade Center was attacked the first time in 1993. The only difference between the attacks in 1993 and 2001 is the buildings didn't come down.
Exactly.
America was attacked again under George Bush Jr. administration with 9/11. And people thought it was Bush that drove them to hate us and attack us and thought that if we elected the Messiah, Barack Hussein Obama, all our sins are going to be forgiven and they are going to love us and stop attacking us. 2 days, Michael, after Obama became president, Al-Qaeda issued a press release saying that it doesn't matter who lives in the White House. Quote, we continue our jihad against America, end quote. Since Obama became president, the attacks against America have risen to the point where we have arrested so far over 75 homegrown terrorists, all Muslims, trying to kill Americans or perpetrate attacks against America.
Unbelievable.
You know, the 9/11 report said we lacked imagination. We have no excuse 9 years after September 11th to say we lack imagination. They are telling us exactly how much they hate us and how much they want to kill us and why. They also live here, Michael. They are Americans. Al-Qaeda right now is under an American leadership.
What?
Adnan Shukri Jum'a, the son of an imam in Florida, is now chief of operations for Al-Qaeda worldwide. Adnan Ghaddan from California is Al-Qaeda's spokesperson. Imam Anwar al-Awlaki of Virginia is now Bin Laden's ear and the head of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Samir Khan from New York is now the editor-in-chief of Al-Qaeda's internet magazine Inspire. And what they are inspiring are more Muslims to join the cause of jihad. Omar Hammami from Alabama is now the commander of Al-Shabaab in Somalia.
This is unbelievable to me.
What makes the war we are fighting now so dangerous, Michael, and so different from any other war that the U.S. has ever fought, is that the enemy is here operating from within. When you think about the 9/11 attacks, you realize the perpetrators had American driver's licenses, started flying at American schools, paid for by American dollars, dressed in American attires, hijacked American planes, and flew them into American buildings. The whole job, Michael, was done from within. They came here legally, most of them, and between all 19 of them, they had 63 driver's licenses. It's unbelievable.
What kind of numbers are we talking about?
Here are the numbers of how many Muslims have been coming to the United States through legal immigration and naturalization from a specific list of countries. This does not include the terrorists who are sneaking in through the Mexican border by the thousands since 9/11. These numbers are from the last 15 years. Here it goes. 124,174 have arrived from Iran. 27,858 from Somalia. 16,879 from Sudan. 22,523 from Syria. 95,482 from Pakistan. 67,073 from Nigeria. 25,930 from Jordan, 36,929 from Iraq, 38,563 from Egypt, 4,265 from Saudi Arabia, and 22,445 from Turkey.
That's almost a half million from those countries alone.
Other countries account for additional hundreds of thousands that I don't have the time to get into here. What these countries have in common is that they are all hotbeds and breeding grounds for radical Islam. They represent a huge risk imposed on the American people. Terrorists require pre-existing communities in which to hide in plain sight, communities they can intimidate from within. Mao Zedong wrote about this at length in his Little Red Book. Our current immigration system constitutes a sleeper cell assembly line, Michael. A sleeper cell assembly line.
That's crazy. Sorry, crazy.
It is unbelievable. In light of the very serious, indeed dire threat to our national security and the safety of all Americans, Isn't it time to consider an immigration reform big time?
Well, I've been saying for years to take care of our borders, language, and culture.
This is why the American public must be informed and must take action. It is not enough to just sit in the car and listen to the information. We must act and act with passion and drive to match our enemy's passion and drive to destroy us. I urge our listeners to go to actforamerica.org and join us. If you have never written a letter, if you have never sent an email or made a phone call to your elected officials, now is the time to start. On this anniversary of 9/11, please do something and become a voice affecting your community and our nation. If you just listen to this interview without taking action, you might as well have been watching Dancing with the Stars. Go to actforamerica.org and sign our petition to stop the mosque at Ground Zero. We are building the NRA of national security, and we need you with us. No issue is more important than national security and freedom. For if we are ruled by tyranny or killed by terrorists, all other causes will not matter.
Brigitte, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. Have a wonderful weekend.
I've asked this question before. How many of you feel safer under Obama? How safe does this more transparent government make you feel? Yeah, more transparent.
Savage.
Here's some headlines from MichaelSavage.com. City Council meeting in Hartford, Connecticut to begin with Muslim prayers. Can you believe this story? U.S. loans Mexico $1 billion to drill in the Gulf. Even liberal elites concede Obama's presidency is crumbling. These are all on MichaelSavage.com, and let me point you to Trickle Up Poverty. You know, it's only a few weeks till it comes out, but you can pre-order now on Amazon. Trickle Up Poverty is my new book. It's your best defense against the Obamanomics that are really attacking the middle class into a Marxist-socialist death spiral. Nobody says it like Savage. On the bottom, Fidel says to Ahmadinejad, stop slandering the Jews. A Long Island man arrested for defending his home. That's a black man. Came out with his AK-47 to stop what he thought was going to be an invasion of his home by the vicious gang MS-13. So Latinos were on his lawn. They wouldn't leave. He got an AK-47. They arrested the black man. Again, the government protecting the criminals. Now, there's so many other stories, you just can't believe this. Toyota courts customers with Hispanic pride stickers. Somos muchos Latinos, celebrating their Hispanic heritage. I want to read a letter I got from a listener. Dr. Savage changed the show's format and introduced novel topics, starting with your interview on investments, that he's directing this to Craig Smith, and also to a financial expert taking questions on finances. Savage's readings from the Bible are beautifully timeless, and the commentaries are superb, cleverly connected to a particular story. Michael has a knack for weaving poetry with music and impromptu alliterations. He probably never gets enough feedback to validate what he is doing. That can be frustrating. Believe me, I know that. Next time you see or speak to Michael, tell him that the financial segment was fantastic. He navigated through interviews like a fine yacht, with candor and ease, and both you and Santelli were articulate providers of useful information to the audience. People are starved for the truth as they're lied to so much and so blatantly in the news media. Dr. Savage delivers the truth with aplomb, gusto, conviction, and an unsurpassed knowledge of nutrition, botany, history, and herbal medicine. His segment on nutrition was fascinating. He tied his book, Maximum Immunity, to a caller who had saved the lives of many people with HIV who suffered and succumbed to serious infections from Candida albicans, commonly known as thrush. Savage then waltzed into politics about the dreadful redecoration of the Oval Office, the Muslim siege of Parisian streets. He segued into the use and overuse of vitamins, the malnutrition and overnutrition of Americans, the chemically altered and damaged food source, resplendent with hormones and pesticides, and then back to Michelle's war on obesity, while she hypocritically and shamelessly is photographed consuming ice cream at every turn. Dr. Savage is truly a treasure, says this doctor. There is nobody out there who is even remotely like him. He has a talent from God that cannot be replicated. He is probably the most articulate and erudite of all talk show hosts, and that includes O'Reilly, who has a degree from Harvard. Academia and affirmative action may have rejected Savage years ago, but they did him a favor. He was destined for radio and fame. God offered him a much larger teaching platform. Although he wrote so many books, made tremendous contributions to botany through his plant collections, touched so many lives over the years through his show, he was unfairly placed in a list by the British government with the most disgusting individuals and murderers. Savage did not deserve this fate. Few are really coming to his defense as an American citizen. He is ignored by the media while they steal his ideas with attribution. God bless him. I hope he continues to write stories from his childhood. It brings back many memories for the rest of us. Sincerely, IJ, PhD. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. I'll take a call now on the Savage Nation. Here's Mississippi Greg. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, a great pleasure.
Thank you.
I just wanted to ask what you think we can do to salvage the food culture in this country, since you talk a lot about food, or language, borders, and culture. Big problem I seem to see in my profession is that, people associate their food with whatever they can get at the fast food places or in supermarkets and so forth, and I think.
Well,
that's
what really... would you? Are you a cook? Are you a chef?
No, sir. I'm a physician, actually.
Interesting. So, how would you define American cuisine? What would typify American cuisine?
I think most people, in my experience, the problem is processed food, the industrialization of our food sources. Oftentimes, the food that we eat might not even come from the same continent.
Oh, so you're not talking about menus. You're talking about quality, the actual inherent quality of vegetables, fruits, meat, et cetera, right?
Well, also, I mean, people don't they don't own the sense of where their food is coming from. For example, Italians eat Italian food, and, Chinese eat Chinese food.
Right, but they don't even ask where did it – right. If you go to Chinese food and you eat it, do you know where the shrimp are coming from, for example? They used to come out of the Gulf. Unfortunately, now most of them are coming out of Bangladesh or Thailand. They're farm-raised, and they're poison.
Yes. And I
mean, that's what you're talking about. We all know, see people who are into this. I mean, I for example, I like smoked salmon. Now, I love wild salmon that's been smoked properly with a low smoke flavor in it. But if I see farm-raised salmon, I won't eat it because they're full of antibiotics. The salmon are raised in ponds, and they're fed certain feeds to make them fatter faster, and the feeds are filled with growth hormones and antibiotics. I don't want to eat fish like that, obviously. So, but if you go to a restaurant and you're eating smoked salmon, you know darn well it's going to be the cheapest they can get their hands on, right?
Absolutely.
This is the challenge we all have, which is going into a restaurant and trying to eat food that's healthful. It's almost impossible unless they're stating on the menu, all of our produce is organically grown. Our meats are raised on X farm. Our fish is not farm raised. Some of them are doing that now.
And I agree with you about trying to, use natural methods and nutritional methods first, brethren. I mean, I am a standard primary care physician, but I do try.
I think that you heard me say it's not the doctor's fault today with the prescription drugs. It's part and parcel of the culture. It's very hard for you as a physician not to prescribe something because people go in there. I will bet you'll confirm this. They want you to prescribe something. They feel as they're cheated unless you write a prescription for them. Am I right about that?
I would say in the vast majority of the cases, yes.
Yes, and I swear to you, the government, this is an interesting thing that I'm about to say. I probably get criticized for it. But some of what Obamacare is trying to do makes sense, incidentally. You know, there are certain aspects of reigning in healthcare costs that make good sense. We all know that there's corruption and greed in virtually every sphere, including medicine. But when you realize that people are getting medical care for virtually every creaky crank complaint for free, something has to give. You have to cut it back somewhere, don't you?
Yes, and I do think that it has to start with Americans changing their expectations of what, like you say, what medicine should do for them. If
Exactly. In other words, I remember when I was young, I once complained about an ache or a pain I had. I was about 12. And my mother said, she said, don't you think I have aches and pains? I don't talk about them. Just forget it. Now, today, right away, they run to the doctor. Maybe you got them MRI, CAT scan. God only knows what they put you on. 10 different drugs for a little ache. The human being has to learn to live with these things. Don't you think that's part of the missing link in our education?
Yes, and it is, and I struggle every day with how to help us out of that because.
Well, look, I know that being a physician today is still a noble profession for men like you. I can hear in your voice that you didn't go in it for the money; you went in it to help people, and so I respect that. I truly do. My whole point is that there's an overuse of prescription drugs and an underuse of nutrition. That was really the primary. Animus of what I was talking about. I appreciate the work you do, and I thank you for calling the program. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here are some of the news stories that I didn't get to yet. Old Bush won't comment on Obama's policies. Some people are criticizing President Obama's handling of the economy, but old George W. will not be one of them, the former president said. One day after Obama announced another $50 billion plan to create jobs by rebuilding roads, railways, and runways, Bush told an audience in Fort Worth that he doesn't believe that the federal government can grow itself out of the economic mess and should focus on stimulating entrepreneurship and small business growth. But he avoided directly attacking Obama's policies. I don't think it's befitting the office of the presidency to go out and be criticizing my successor, said Bush. I didn't like it when some of my predecessors criticized me. So there he is. That's old George Bush, full of honor, integrity, and class. GOP turnout exceeding Democrats for the first time since 1930. That's interesting. The share of Americans voting in GOP primaries hit 10%. I can't read these figures. Everyone's predicting there's going to be a tidal wave against the Dems. I hope so, but I'm not that optimistic that the Repubs will do any different. So-called Imam Ralph, who wants to build a Ground Zero mosque, was on CNN, the Crescent News Network. Listen to this.
People all over the Muslim world admire America, love America.
Wait,
take America as an example.
Admire and love America, but they don't show it, do they? Continue.
Take America as an example in many, many respects, and the status of Muslims in America, and how American Muslims speak to these issues, and how America engages with its Muslim community has global ramifications.
Separation of church and state is good, says Ralph.
This concept of separation of religion and politics, or church and state, has a wisdom behind it. And the purpose behind it is not to politicize religion. Because when you politicize religion, it is dangerous.
But what is Islam?
If we move from that location, the story will be that the radicals have taken over the discourse. The headlines in the Muslim world will be that Islam is under attack.
If you move, you show sensitivity, Ralph.
The concern for American citizens who live and work and travel overseas will increasingly be compromised if the radicals are strengthened. And if we do move, it will strengthen the argument of the radicals to recruit, their ability to recruit.
Okay,
and,
enough.
And they're increasing.
They already target Americans. They have even before 9/11. Remember 93 when they attacked the World Trade Center? But wait, this is the best line. Listen to him here.
And why is it hard to back up and say, and now that we've done it, let's undo it. Let's just say we won't. Let's pick another spot that's been offered.
As I just mentioned, our national security now.
Our national security.
Hinges on how we negotiate this.
Is he crazy?
How we speak about it and what we do.
This is not about national security, but understanding by a group that seems to show little of that. He's threatening us, that's all. And here is the Hollywood lunatic, Angela Anjali, telling us how great the Pakistani military is.
Do you think the government response here was too slow? We've heard this from many, many people ourselves over the last 5 weeks. Government was nowhere to be seen.
Well, from what I understand, the military, though, was very active, and that is separate from the government, but I think they're to be commended for what they've done. And yeah, of course, the government can do more. Of course, and our governments can do more.
It's just a shame that they can't do what they're supposed to do and win the battle against the Pakistani Taliban, because a good percentage of them are the Pakistani Taliban, dummy. Bill Clinton can't keep his head down. Listen.
People are mad. They got a right to be mad. They hire Democrats to fix things. They don't really ever hire us till things are in a mess, and then they hire us to fix them. So the Republicans have said, okay, we put the country in a $3 trillion hole, but they had 21 whole months to fix it. Throw them out. And people are saying, yeah, sounds like a good idea to me.
It's a great idea. All the libs have done is take a problem and create an even bigger one. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Study shows illegal immigrants from Mexico staying put despite overall decline. No kidding. Why should they leave? They never had it so good. Elderly men are more likely to suffer memory problems than women, new research shows. Well, that's because they have more to forget, I guess. That's no question about that. Now, I want to tell you something. I've been an observant person from the time I was a child. I was born that way. Or I don't know if you're born or whatever. I'm super observant. I have been ever since I've been a child. An ant would go by, I would observe it. So I became a biologist early on. Now I'm a commentator, a social commentator. So wherever I go, I observe. So today, I bicycle past the park, and then, you know, school is out, and I see the kids, the little kids playing with their parents, and it's nice to hear as I zip by, and I hear Spanish. Spanish to the children, Spanish to the parents, and the children are playing in Spanish. They're playing Ring Around the Rosie. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, siete, ocho, nueve, diez. I said, how nice. They won't learn a word of English. The parents won't speak to them in a word of English. And you say, well, why do they have to learn English? You got these white liberal pinkos who cater to them in the foreign language of Spanish, giving them the welfare check, giving them the license, bending over backwards to make sure that they're comfortable in a country they broke into. So why should they speak English? No, speak of the English. I'm sick of it. I'm getting sick of it. And I am the son of an immigrant. Learn the damn language if you want to stay here is what I'd like to scream, but I don't say a word. I bicycle by. I've learned to keep my tongue, except on the radio. I rarely say a word off the air, I'll tell you right now. Then I go down to the mall and there's a farmer's market. There it was again. The poorest farmers imaginable, they're really not farmers, a lot of them. They buy it wholesale and sell it at a farmer's market, which is a ripoff unto itself, by the way. They're basically in a black economy, a black market economy. You know, and I think there's something wrong with that. There's no taxes on those farmer's markets. There's no sanitation on the farmer's markets. And what they're doing is they're undercutting the groceries and the supermarkets. Well, I mean farmer's market. How many of those people are really farmers? They're not farmers. They're buying them wholesale and selling them by and large at retail. And so, but that's not the point. There it was again. There were the old liberal women going from stand to stand taking the freebies. It got me so mad. Again, they would say one stand after the other like little chipmunks, the freebies. I fume. So I said, shut your mouth, don't say anything. Just buy the fruit yourself and do the best you can. Every last one of them may as well have been wearing an Obama sticker on her forehead. One old liberal woman after another with the freebies. I swear to God, the same type that you would see marching with the Greens or marching with Code Pink was marching from stand to stand, stealing the fruit basically from the poor farmers, if you want to call them that. Not buying a damn thing. They come there to eat for free. And it galls me. It galls me. I can't stand it. It makes me sick. I once said, you're enjoying stuff in your face there? Whoa, she got mad at me. She was a Brooklynite who moved out here. She goes stand to stand to stand. They eat for free, these people. You never saw anything like this. I didn't say anything. I go on and I observe. Then I pass the bakery. There's a mother giving a child two chocolate donuts at the thing in the morning. Two infants, 2 years old. They're stuffing donuts down the face. And the fat mother's saying, "Ooh, what a good donut." Again, I wanted to say, lady, do you know you're poisoning your children? You're making them incapable of functioning? Again, I don't say a word. I go by. And here we are. So we're sitting in talk radio. It's a commercial medium, considered an entertainment medium. Talk radio is in the world of AM radio. And so in AM radio, it largely was a music format. In the early days of radio, talk radio comes from the entertainment section of the band. It's still an entertainment medium when you think about it. So in order to survive and thrive, as I have done for these 16 years, you have to be entertaining, you have to be educational, you have to be captivating. There's a lot of things you have to be, or you wouldn't rise to where I've risen and stayed there for so long. But now I'm telling you that the show has to change. The show has to change because America is changing, the format is changing, and I'm changing. And I suspect the audience is changing. Savage.